Hello, everyone, and welcome to our companion audio program to the November 2023 edition of Logistics Pulse Supply Chain Executive Briefing, which is co-produced by Logistics Plus and Armada Corporate Intelligence and available online at logisticsplus.com/logisticspulse. Thank you again to our partners at WPSC Money Radio for recording and editing today's show. Today is actually Friday, November 17th, and our November bulletin was officially published yesterday. So again, welcome to another episode of Dumb Guy Talking to Smart Guy. I'm Scott Frederick, the CMO for Logistics Plus. I'm the dumb guy, and up here with me is our regular guest and partner, the star of the show, Keith Braether, Managing Director for Armada Corporate Intelligence. So, Keith, looking at our issue that we just put out yesterday, according to page one headlines, Q4 GDP is looking to be maybe in the 1-2% range. Inflation is trending down. Our global logistics index is still showing expansion for the demand for logistics services, but it's down over the previous couple of months. What do you think? Are we headed for a soft landing in 2024?
I think so. I do think that that's sort of the prevailing sentiment right now. Some folks don't even see even a soft landing. I mean, what they see is maybe somewhere between, 1% growth for the first half of next year and maybe for the full year, a little closer to 2%. So it's not, it's not like a recession fear so much as it's maybe like a return to normal. You know, in the decade between the Great Recession and the pandemic, we were averaging about 2% growth. And so as a business, you kind of know what that environment feels like. You know how to manage through it. Now, the freight sector, is a little bit different. And we've been dealing with this inventory overstock problem like we talked about. We'll touch on that here in a couple minutes. But I think early in 2024, I do think the global market is going to pick up a little momentum. And I do think that we're probably looking at, worst case scenario, kind of a flat scenario, I believe, where the first half is a little bit, lackluster, a little sluggish. But as long as we have really good, strong wage growth and a good unemployment environment, which right now we still have near record low unemployment, we've just got a lot of job openings in the market. And so with that backdrop and that environment, it's really tough for the economy to go into recession. And we're seeing inflation ease a little bit. And I think with a little inflation easing, gives consumers a little more money in their pocket to spend on discretionary items, which have been kind of lackluster for the last year. And so I just think a lot of those, as we start to see the market settle a little bit, a lot of those tailwinds start to kick in. And, there's a lot of Wall Street banks even right now kind of completely pulling recession off the table. So I feel like, we're shifting from kind of a hunker down and try to weather what looks like a recession to more, forward thinking, where we need to be a little more growth minded. And I think that's a little of where we're going to be early in 24.
Yeah. And of course, one of the factors is inventories, which you already mentioned. As we look at the coming year, inventory to sales ratios are certainly a key indicator of future freight demand. When ratios are low, replenishment activity is robust and freight flows are strong. When ratios are high, freight demand slows down as companies look to sell through their higher inventories. How do inventory to sales ratios look right now across all industries? And are there any outliers that you're seeing right now?
Yeah, I mean, as you said early on, we put it in the pulse because the inventory to sales ratio data just came out. And it lags a little bit, Scott, because it's about 30 days trailing the rest of the marketplace and the rest of the economic data that we typically get. It takes that long to do the inventory adjustments and to really understand where we are from a micro segment perspective, as we break down each industry and look at it individually. But what we saw was we still have about 64% of the marketplace, the goods moving, goods handling, and goods selling side of the economy, sitting in what we consider to be kind of an overstock situation. And by that, what we do is we took the inventory to sales ratios and we compared it to the decade average between the Great Recession and the pandemic. And during that period of time, interest rates were pretty low, but the global supply chain was kind of in cycle. When we knew what transit times looked like, we knew kind of what our fulfillment and order cycle times looked like. And so we could plan our inventories accordingly. And so for that decade, we had a whipping type of inventory to supply chain or inventory to sales ratio, but it's fairly consistent. And so what we're looking for is we're comparing current inventory to sales ratios with that period of time, knowing that if that was normal, you know, where are we today? And today we're still inflated. So we're still sitting, again, about 64% of the marketplace is sitting what we consider to be heavy relative to where we were prior to the pandemic. And the reason why we love the inventory to sales ratio is because it allows inventories to flex up and down relative to where sales volumes are. So that being said, right now, it looks like we haven't seen a lot of adjustment in the inventory to sales ratio, but looking forward, we're starting to get these little anecdotes. So a couple major retailers reported earnings over the last 48 hours, basically. And some of them are saying their inventory volumes are literally down 15 to 20% over where they were a year ago. And so they have made all the relative adjustments in their supply chain. So what we believe is going to happen is that we'll get good sell-through in the peak, even into early next year. And then it creates what we call sort of this global supply chain reset sometime toward the end of Q1 and early into Q2. And that reignites the entire global supply chain. As you and I have talked about many, many times, you know, when we think about an inventory overstock, what it really does is it really shuts off the upstream portion of the supply chain. So, you know, as a manufacturer orders raw materials and hires people and uses energy, you know, in the upstream portion of the supply chain to create a finished good, it's that portion of the supply chain that's really shut off today. And then the downstream portion of it, when you order a product from a manufacturer, if they can go to the warehouse shelf and they can go fulfill that order, we're still seeing the downstream part of the supply chain working, which is why the index is still pretty good. We'll talk about that in a second. But this whole reset allows the freight economy worldwide to restart itself and to really start to build momentum long before we see it in the macro economy. So that's why I think, again, even if the macro economy is a little bit sluggish early next year, we could really see the freight economy starting to rebound and starting to pick up momentum as companies start to then replenish inventory volumes and kind of work their way into the back to school season and summer season. And we kind of get into the rest of 24.
Yeah, if you peel away the kind of the retail inventories ratios and try and think of, again, upstream, like what you mentioned, you know, I'm thinking of like automotive and some of those segments. How do those inventory levels look? And do you think, like, again, specifically automotive with the work stoppage that we had here recently, it seems like there's got to be some more inventory building coming up soon, I would think, right?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And yeah, I kind of skipped over that and you'd asked it before. it's interesting because there are two big pockets where we see overstocks. And I think there's some backstories there. So automotive, you're right on. Automotive doesn't have overstocks. We're really still in a historic inventory shortage sort of position right now. I mean, we see inventory to sales ratios in the automotive industry at levels we just never seen before. And they still have to try and rebuild those inventories. Last time I saw, the EV market seems to be well supplied for most dealers, but when you look at the traditional gasoline or diesel vehicles, we're sitting at less than 50 days of inventory, which is pretty low for them. And so the automotive supply chain should be ready to get reinvigorated and kind of get back to work and kind of get back to normal post UAW strike. And that just really invigorates a lot of suppliers around the country. Other sectors, though, there's a couple of pockets where we see some problems. We see some problems in the home appliances sector. We do see overstocks there, electrical or electronics stores. We see some overstocks there where we're sitting on 30 to 40% higher inventory volumes relative to sales over where we were in the pandemic or prior to the pandemic, sorry. And there's a couple other areas, too, where we're having problems, but there's a backstory. And real fast, and we're going to take just a second, but companies that are feeding right now the construction supply chain, if you think about wholesalers in plumbing, heating, and electrical, and other areas of building supplies, we're seeing an overstock situation there. But the backstory is that they're only missing a couple of key components. So they're missing some back orders on things like electrical control panels for projects. And what happens is because of the backlog and the back orders on that particular product, it's holding up what is really good, strong construction demand. So the hardware, plumbing, and electrical wholesalers are showing overstocks because they're getting ready when they look at project demand and they order inventories and they get beefed up and ready to support those projects. they get the inventories on site, and then all of a sudden the project gets stalled because they're waiting on an electrical panel. Once the electrical panel gets put in place, then those inventories get depleted and they're able to finish the project. So it's a little bit of fits and spurts in that sector. And that right now is making up a big piece of the broader macroeconomic inventory overstock situation. But retailers are fairly much in line. Healthcare sector is pretty much in line. Even what we saw like the home improvement retailers were overstocked. They've now kind of got their situation back in line. So again, I think overall, I think we're heading in the right direction. And I think the data will start to reflect that over the next 60 days or so.
Very interesting. Thanks for the insights, and something we'll definitely keep an eye on. You know, it's November. We're almost into December. It's the end of the year, end of 2023, and supply chain managers are, you know, finalizing their budgets and forecasts for the coming year. And so actually a lot of our customers are asking us to look into our crystal ball and provide some sort of guidance, particularly as it relates to, you know, transportation costs, you know, possible bottlenecks in supply chain. In this month's Logistics Pulse, as we do in every issue, you know, we're tracking all the different modes. So we see truckload rates that are significantly lower on a year-over-year basis, but starting to inch back up a little bit. Less than truckload shipping rates are up 3 to 4% over last year, of course, driven in large part by the closure of Yellow, which took essentially 10 to 12% of the capacity out of the marketplace. Parcel rates are also tracking a bit higher. Of course, we have the new UPS labor agreement that's probably pushing those up a little bit. On the forwarding side of things, air freight prices remain considerably lower than last year. And also ocean freight rates are also well below last year's record highs. Warehousing rates remain high, but seem to be trending downward a bit. So with all these sort of trends in mind, any advice we can offer supply chain managers that are trying to look forward for next year?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So we just, you know, had the big dialogue about inventories. And one of the outcomes of that is that supply chain managers have time to think and time to plan. When the market slows down like it is right now, and when we have very low global supply chain congestion, we have anxious manufacturers and wholesalers that want to fulfill orders quickly. We have almost no back order situations. When you look across Asia, we look across Europe, almost all the manufacturers are back in cycle. Supply chain managers have time to think, and that also means that they have time to manage their costs. So I think that the lower cost modes, even if they have longer transit times, are going to be popular next year, and I think you'll start to see capacity tighten just a little bit in those modes. So think about maritime, you think about rail, we think about truckload. I think you're going to see a little more demand in those modes because, again, supply chain managers can take their time, they can plan, and they've got the ability to use slower transit times to their advantage. I think some of the faster modes, other than LTL, and I'll talk, you know, LTL is a different story, but you think about air cargo and expedited services, a lot of those are still going to find, I think, some pretty lackluster volume in 2024. It doesn't mean that there won't be customers out there trying to use very small tuck-in orders to kind of fill over out-of-stock situations. So if I've got an assembly line and I'm good on inventory of most items, but I need, you know, a specific type of fastener, I'm going to expedite that fastener in to be able to keep that supply chain running or that assembly line running. And so you still have those. But I don't think like air cargo and very fast modes being a primary form of transit are really going to come back in vogue, you know, right away in 2024. So that being said, I mean, LTL is going to be a different story because we do have Yellow exiting the industry. Again, historically, when we've looked at that, we have seen anywhere from 4 to 8% price increases up to a year, between a year and 16 months away from the actual bankruptcy event. So you're probably looking at easily probably the beginning of 2025 before we see the market really fully adjust to the loss of capacity and for prices really to kind of adjust back down to a what we call sort of a market-driven premise, right? So I think you've got that. And I don't know, it's tough for me to actually put some numbers around some of these markets, but I do think right now, from a pricing perspective, we're probably at a trough. And that might be the best way to describe it. And then I think from here, capacity tightens a little bit. But I think everything stays within a normalized range, something that we were more accustomed to, again, in that decade prior to the pandemic.
Yeah. Of course, oil prices will obviously, you know, factor heavily into overall transportation costs in the coming year, and we would touch on it in the bulletin. But at this point, unless there's any major disruptions, I think most economists are projecting pretty stable oil prices, I think, for next year.
Yeah, there's just, and it's one of those situations where, again, you talk to five economists about especially oil prices, and you are definitely going to get five different answers. Even the EIA from month to month is really changing their forecast and their outlook. You know, right now, as we're recording this, West Texas Intermediate is trading down around $74 a barrel, which is way down. You know, we saw $95 a barrel not too long ago. And the geopolitical premium, the concerns over what's happening in the Middle East are starting to fade. There's been some activity over the last 48 hours with Iran and the United States. We released some funds that were being held in Iraq that belonged to Iran. And in exchange for that, you know, we've got some back channel meetings taking place to try and figure out how to stop the conflict in Israel from spreading and getting broader in the Middle East. And U.S.'s big show of force has really got Iran kind of taking a back step. So the stock market's kind of reacting to that. And so we've seen oil prices plummet. So the geopolitical premium has been pulled completely off of it. But the flip side of it is that right now, global oil inventories are actually pretty low. And even though global demand for oil is down, since we have a lot of countries around the world that are, you know, seeing like manufacturing sectors in contraction and some of the services sectors even now into contraction, they just haven't officially called recession. They're all pretty weak economically. And so we don't see a lot of global demand for oil right now. And that's what's helping kind of pull that price down. The last little factor we've got is the U.S. dollar is still very strong. And anytime we have a strong dollar, that keeps a lid and keeps a cap on oil prices. And so you've got all those factors kind of pushing oil prices down. But then the backs behind the scenes, we're looking at historically low oil inventory levels in the United States. So Cushing, Oklahoma right now is sitting at levels we really haven't seen for easily a decade, maybe even further back. And typically when oil inventories have been this low, oil prices per barrel have been above $100 a barrel. So our thinking is any uptick in economic activity, any hint that global demand is improving, and oil prices are going to start to surge because we can't bring supply on fast enough. But that being said, again, when you look at EIA forecasts for 2024 and you look at where they have demand forecasted, it looks like current production will meet that pace. And so they're forecasting oil prices, right? You know, today we're at 74. They're forecasting them not to average anything higher than about $82 to $83 a barrel for all of 24. So it's almost like what we've got right now is kind of the environment to expect for most of next year.
Okay. I know we're kind of nearing the end here. One of the things, you know, we watch closely is the New York Fed's Global Supply Chain Pressures Index, which is kind of at a surprisingly low point right now, which indicates not a lot of issues with moving stuff through supply chains. A little bit in conflict. Maybe it's not quite the indicator that's as timely because, you know, we're seeing some congestion at the ports again. I think a little bit uptick there. We see at least in our Logistics Pulse Port Congestion Index, you know, we've got some river situations in terms of the Rhine in Europe and the Mississippi River here in the U.S. So surprising that pressures index is as low as it is. Any thoughts on that, Keith, before we kind of close things out?
Yeah, so we actually got some improvement in the Rhine situation. So the Rhine now is flowing normally and we're able to get full barges up and down it. But the Mississippi is a different story. We're still seeing significant challenges south of St. Louis and the Mississippi River. So heavily impacting the commodities market, anything that was raw commodities, grains, fertilizers, you know, think about the farming community and ag, big impacts there. Also, you know, some movement of raw materials, steel and some of the big heavy stuff really still being impacted in the United States. But, you know, generally, if you think about around the world, and most of the congestion, like any of the delays, backlogs of getting orders, as I mentioned earlier, coming out of Asia, all the supply chains are back in cycle and those ports are flowing pretty good. I think what we had in the United States was just some interesting things happening like around the Panama Canal, where we still have challenges getting freight through the Panama Canal. You see increased transit times through there. And so I think a lot of companies are now changing their inbound strategies, at least temporarily. And that's why you see some congestion at some ports, especially on the West Coast. And then we do see just a little more congestion over on the East Coast with a lot of inbound coming across the Atlantic. But you generally, it's also interesting that we're starting to see kind of some late season inbound TEUs, a little bit of an uptick. If you look at like the National Retail Federation and what they're forecasting for November, December upticks in TEUs, it's actually ahead of where we were in 2022 and approaching still close to that 2 million TEUs a month inbound rate, which is pretty high. And so just the throughput and trying to process that freight, anywhere we would have maybe had staff furloughs, trying to get people back on the job and kind of get them in to handle those volumes, I think is just, there's a little bit of a lag or a little bit of a delay there. So I think that's largely at least what I think is going on. I mean, you had mentioned, some of the blank sailings, and I think that that's kind of a factor as well. And but I think it's basically just some unexpected volumes kind of hitting us late in the peak season that maybe we weren't expecting. But, generally, I think the global supply chain is still pretty much in cycle now.
Yeah. Well, of course, one final thought here, a lot of the supply chains are closer than they were just even a couple of years ago, right? So for the first time since 2002, I think it was that the imports in the U.S. from Mexico are surpassing what we used to import from China, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you can feel that because with the President Biden's meeting with President Xi from China, it's almost like the economic headwinds and trying to get China's economy back in some kind of a growth mode is trumping, geopolitical headwinds and conflict and worries about regional, expansion. It's almost like everyone's kind of said, look, let's forget the wars and conflicts right now. Let's focus on economics and let's focus on growth. And so China's feeling that shift of sourcing headed to, near markets, near shoring areas, especially Mexico. And we can see the uptick in Mexico. Mexico still had one of the positive manufacturing sectors this month. We had about 22 countries that had manufacturing sectors in contraction. Mexico was one of the few that was actually expanding. And that was even with an automotive industry that was still kind of going through the fits and spurts of the UAW strike. So we definitely see it in the data, and we know that China's suffering from it as a result. So I think it's kind of interesting, and we wrote in the brief about the fact that supply chain managers, especially throughout Asia, were trying to shift their focus from, just trying to kind of get through and survive over the last 2 to 3 years and get their supply chains back in cycle to now, how do we grow it? How do we grow, volumes in the supply chains? How do we go grow business? How do we go win suppliers? And how do we go back on offense after 2 years of just trying to manage, backlogs and congestion and just trying to get the supply chain to flow? So there's a lot of shifting taking place. And I think a lot of focus in 2024, especially on an international perspective, will be countries and individuals just shifting their attention again to growth. And as U.S. suppliers kind of still think about diversification and, how they continue to keep supply chain continuity and focus. And there's going to be a lot of cost focus, to be honest with you, Scott, just trying to, folks just trying to keep, what looks like a little bit of a deflationary cycle in 2024 in front of them so that they can kind of keep their corporate profits and their corporate margins intact. And that means a little bit of a ripple effect throughout the whole supply chain where they're asking suppliers and partners to cut costs, so that they can kind of weather what looks like a little more deflation maybe than disinflation as we get into the middle part of next year.
All right, Keith, thank you so much. We've covered, I think, enough ground for today. Again, encourage everybody to check out this month's briefing. Again, appreciate your partnership with us, Keith, and all the insights you bring. I always look forward to picking your brain in these sessions and kind of getting some further insights into some of these trends. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
Yep. In addition to our standard supply chain topics and trends, this month's briefing, we also feature 3 Logistics Plus podcasts at the bottom of the last page. One is with our COO, a very interesting conversation with Global Trade Magazine. Another with one of our key executives based in Charlotte. And the third is a nice interview we had with a couple folks who are spearheading some of our Ukrainian support and development efforts. So encourage people to click those links at the bottom of the last page of the briefing. You can also find them along with today's Logistics Pulse program online at logisticsplus.com/podcast. Again, as a final reminder, we encourage you to visit logisticsplus.com/logisticspulse to view our November issue of this month's briefing. You can also subscribe to future issues there, which will arrive in your email inbox. And again, Logistics Pulse is a complimentary value-added intelligence briefing for Logistics Plus customers, partners, and prospects. So until next month, stay safe, have a happy Thanksgiving, and be sure to keep your finger on the pulse of logistics.